We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Greg Olson, here to tell you about my new podcast, TE1. On the show, I had a chance to talk to my fellow tight ends who have revolutionized the position from an extra lineman to a dual threat superstar. And just like my guests have changed the game, this year, NFLSundayTicket.tv is revolutionizing your NFL viewing experience. Stream all the live out-of-market NFL games every Sunday on your favorite devices and never miss a moment from your favorite players. Visit NFLSundayTicket.tv and use the promo code Greg88 at checkout and get 15% off your subscription. That's NFLSundayTicket.tv and the promo code Greg88. Subscribe to TE1 and get NFLSundayTicket.tv, an unmatched dual threat.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to the Brooklyn Buzz. I'm your host, Nick Faye. With me, as always, Jack Manuel and Matt Brooks. Fellas, how we doing?
I'm good. Not exactly the result that I think everybody was looking for in this game, too, but I think there's a lot of interesting things to touch on. So, in a weird way, I'm happy that there's a few more takeaways that I can have from this game compared to the last one.
No, I'm doing not as well. I wake up at 3:30, the Nets lose. I go back to sleep at about 6:30. I wake up at 8 a.m. and Joe Harris is leaving the bubble. It's not a good day for me. Not the best start to my day, guys.
Yeah, like Jack mentioned, Nets lost game 2, 104-99, and we got the news about Joe Harris leaving the bubble. Before we dive into that, quick reminder, you can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, OTGBasketball.com, and Blue Wire Pods. But guys, let's talk about Joe Harris leaving the bubble. It was for a non-medical reason. It was a personal matter, so obviously we don't know the details about that. Hopefully everything is okay with Joe, but what does this mean for the Nets team moving to game 3 and game 4? Because he's at least going to miss two games given, you know, quarantine and all the regulations in the bubble.
First off, like I don't want to like speculate on what's going on with him. I just hope everything is all right. And on a basketball side of things, we saw it today and like, we're going to go through the game itself, but the drop off, but from whatever Joe, whoever's filling in his shoes, like is, I guess it's TLC now. That is such a huge loss for them to field, and I just don't even know what that offense looks like because they've been running so much three-man action between Karis and him and Jared Allen, and now I just don't know who's going to be in his spot, who's going to be moving the ball, who's going to be making those decisions. Say what you want about TLC. He's been really great at shooting the ball. Not a great decision maker, like not quick at moving it. You know, if anything, like the little moments where he does move it fast, I get really excited because I'm like, wow, I've never seen that from him. But right now, I don't know. It's not a good look, and I just hope everything's okay.
Echo the sentiments 100% from Matt. I just hope everything with him as well, everything with his family, whatever it might be, whatever circumstances it might be, that he is okay, and everyone around him is okay, because we don't want Joe living the bubble for obvious basketball reasons, but we also care more about the person, like we were talking about, you know, pre-bubble, and Nick and Matt and I were talking about, you know, the guys that unfortunately contracted the coronavirus, and we were just worrying about their health and well-being, and that's what we care more about with these guys than their basketball stuff. But yeah, Matt, I think, you know, when Joe Harris is playing 39 minutes, TLC is playing 36 minutes, and the guys off the bench, Rodon's Kuritz, Chris Gio's, Tyler Johnson, 16, 12, and 22, and all of them are more than minus 10 and plus minus. It's not going to be pretty game three, but you know, the importance that Joe Harris has for this team, and this has had for this team in the bubble, in the entire season, it has been immense. You can almost make an argument that he's been as important as Caris LeVert. Maybe not Jared Allen, because there's no one else to really do what he does out on the floor, but yeah, there's few people in the league that can do what Joe Harris does as well.
Yeah, I think life just got a lot more miserable for Caris LeVert and Jared Allen, because Joe Harris was the only guy Toronto wasn't willing to help off of. And if they did, it was, you know, for a split second and somebody else would make that rotation. So now it just puts so much more pressure on LeVert and Allen, who are going to just see a lot more attention. Like Matt mentioned, they run a lot of actions with those three, and that's like the only time you feel like LeVert or Allen can get some space to operate, and the only time Joe could get some space to operate. So losing, you know, a player of Joe's caliber, especially in this situation where you just don't have options to go to on the bench, where like Tyler Johnson is going to have to play 30 plus minutes, or, you know, Justin Anderson is going to have to fill in, or Jeremiah Martin. Like, there's just no solution to this issue right now, given to what the Nets have on this roster. It's going to be tough. What do you expect Jacques Vaughn to do going into game three?
Oh man. I just don't know what they do about those bench minutes. Like, this was such a tricky game, because I actually thought they played pretty well for the most part. They certainly had moments. Like, I guess you just need Caris to, like, they need to figure out a way to get him downhill a little bit more so that he's not settling as much for those threes. I felt like that just took the wind out of the Nets today. Like, they got about as good of a team effort as you're going to get defensively. They were really pressuring those corner shooters, even in transition. I thought their transition defense was really good today. So for them, I just think there's got to be a way. You got to create, you know, easier looks for Caris. And if you can't do that, then that's where it gets interesting. Like, if you have a team that either they're going under screens, or they're doubling Caris and he's not able to quite create those shots, then I think this becomes a very different conversation. But I'm not really willing to have that conversation yet, because he's been awesome.
Yeah, I got no idea, to be honest, Nick. The skill set that Joe Harris has, as I sort of alluded to, it's irreplaceable on the Brooklyn Nets roster right now. And there'd be few guys, even if, you know, you had Kyrie Irving, Spencer Dinwiddie, and a heap of these guys here, his loss would still be immense in terms of, you know, the absolute tremendous elite expertise he provides from the perimeter, the decision-making and effort on both ends of the floor that he provides. You know, we ran that final play from him. Obviously, we'll get to that a little bit later, but you know, he's just been adding to his game, and you know, now he's having a career high in rebounding performances. Who's going to replace those boards?
that actually is like kind of an issue, because he was really active on the boards. Obviously, he's not the biggest guy, but 15 boards still count.
It was massive, and to say just to surmise his bubble performance was 19.1 points per game, 5.9 rebounds per game, 59.8% from the field, and 55.1% from three. And that's with all the attention that he was getting, despite, you know, the Nets' lack of talent and essentially having three good players. He's still been that effective. He's still been rebounding that well. Ugh, man, just Joe, man. Just Joe. I need to put my Joe shirt on, guys. Give me 2 minutes. I'm going to put it on. Show my guys some love.
Jack might start crying on the show today. But moving over to the game, and let's talk about that last play. Well, not the last play, but we know the last meaningful possession, where the handoff between Joe Harris and Garrett Temple ended up bouncing off Temple's foot and leading to the Raptors getting the ball and getting a dunk that sealed the win. What were your thoughts on that play call, the execution?
Oh, man, I didn't like it. I'll say it. I don't know what on earth the idea was to put the ball in Joe Harris's hands. Look, Joe Harris is great. Like, he's a great, great player. And he does so many things well. I don't think that, and I like him creating offense for others as like a guy who receives a pass off the catch. Like, so say you do a pick and roll, he gets the ball on the wing, and then, you know, he pump fakes, goes, you know, drives to the basket and kicks out to another shooter. But I don't really think he should be the initiating point. That seems like a weird way to use Joe Harris. So I hated it, personally. I thought it was a disaster the second they inbounded it to him. I was like, I just like, and I believe in Joe Harris. This isn't a me saying Joe Harris sucks thing or anything. It's just, I felt like it wasn't a good way to use Joe Harris. I think you should have given it to somebody who's going to find him. Go to Karras, go to Temple, somebody like that. And I guess the risk you're running is that if, you know, their off-ball movement with Joe or TLC is smothered, then you have the ball in Temple's hands and he's forced to put up the shot. But I don't know. I didn't love that. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, I know that a few of our Nets fam have been reporting that Javon said the Nets' final play was intended for Joe Harris and got to him, but Kyle Lowry's defense blew the play out. Well, like, in that sort of sense, what did you expect to happen?
Yep. It was a very basic play.
It's just like, oh, yeah, let's get the ball into our best three-point shooter's hands. Yeah, Kyle Lowry and OG Anunoby, they're just going to let him shoot it. Like, it seemed to be... we haven't criticized Jacques Vaughn very often on the show because, honestly, he hasn't had much to criticize about. But in that sort of sense, as Matt was sort of saying, it was just a bit basic. There wasn't a lot of creativity to it. You know, you need to have actions and reactions. What's the plan A? What's the plan B? You know, at the end of the day, you know, as much as you know that the ball is getting into Joe Harris's hands, well, is there going to be some off-ball screening for him? You know, maybe get TLC the ball as well. Maybe try and get, obviously, Garrett Temple fumbled a little bit. Obviously, he was incredibly unhappy with that. You know, that happens. It sort of reminded me of Spencer Dinwiddie throwing away the ball early in the season as well. You know, the Nets sometimes just...
I saw that replay. That's just a funny replay for me to laugh.
It's just emblematic of the Nets season. And, you know, I think that they did so much right in this game. And, you know, probably like 40 minutes of great basketball. But against a team that is just so superior in so many ways, they have to play 48 minutes. And that includes the final 10 seconds, your final shot at, you know, evening up the game. And unfortunately, it wasn't executed. It wasn't drawn up perfectly. I think that, you know, you could have got the ball and just had a bit more movement. It was just way too static and simple and narrow in what was sort of drawn up. So it was, I guess, emblematic of the game itself. You know, the Nets were there, they were there. And then the Raptors are just like, nah, we're going to hit you in the ass like Kyle Lowry did to that trainer on the way back to the locker room. God damn, I hate that dude. Sorry. It's better to be angry at Kyle Lowry than sad about Joe Harris. So I think I prefer those emotions.
Channel that energy. Can I say one thing about Vaughn? I also felt like they should have maybe not challenged, but I just felt like he sat on his hands a little bit. Well, some of those calls down the end, and I know I don't like the idea of getting too upset about calls, but I think also a coach's responsibility is to do that sometimes. Like, you need to yell at the refs if you think there's a really bad call. There were, like, three consecutive bad calls down the stretch, and I just felt like he sat on his hands, and that seems to be his personality, which is fine. Having a chill personality and someone who's laid back is totally fine. Seems like the players vibe with that quite a bit. It's funny because every time Jacques Vaughn does something well, we hear, oh, Kenny Atkinson would have never done that. Kenny Atkinson would have never done that. So let me just do this one way, the other way. I'm going to flip this on its head. Kenny Atkinson would have gotten ejected from that game.
Yeah. I agree. I think, like, you do need to get a tech, especially in a situation like this, considering that, hey, the Raptors are this, you know, the reigning champs. They have all this star power. The Nets are these G Leaguers, these bubble Nets. You need to kind of set the tone, especially when the whistle's going so much. And like Matt said on Twitter, like, you don't want to complain about the refs. That's not the reason the Nets lost the game. But it definitely has some type of vibe with your team. Like, when all these calls are going against you, it just really hurts your momentum, and it feels like such more of an uphill battle.
And I think that obviously we're not going to analyze, you know, too much the armchair psychology and demeanor of Jacques Vaughn and a lot of the sort of calm and rational sort of way that he's been acting and the demeanor that he has had throughout the bubble experience has solidified this team in so many ways. But in that sort of respect, if you're comparing him to a Greg Popovich, to, like Matt mentioned, a Kenny Atkinson, to a Doc Rivers, to a Rick Carlisle, to all basically a heap of the top coaches, they would go crazy. They would, you know, give the tech away. They would throw that $50,000 away because it changes the dynamic, you know, within the team. You know, your coach is your leader in a lot of ways, and they set that sort of tone. So I think he did a lot of right things tonight. You know, we can obviously talk about the fact that he was clearly listening to the Brooklyn Buzz and took my advice to start TLC. Thank you, Jacques. You know, what from one Jacques to another, I appreciate it. Appreciate you listening to the show. Make sure everyone else is subscribing out there as well. But he obviously, he's not perfect, and he's not an elite coach in any sort of respect, or else we wouldn't, you know, if we were to have in that those final plays or in, you know, little minutia throughout the nights, throughout the game today, you know, we would have had, you know, say a Brad Stevens, if you had an Eric Spoelstra, if you had a Doc Rivers, these sort of guys, then I think the result could have been a little bit different. That final play could have been a little bit smarter, could have had a little bit more complexities to it, could have, you know, just had it could have been a different result in some ways. I don't think, you know, Jacques Vaughan's coaching performance today, you know, just decided the result. I think it was just poor execution. I always say that more than any other. And I think that Matt and myself and Nick, you've said this as well, that we put it more down to the players than the coach always. And the coach is always the sort of fall guy. But, you know, he's not a perfect coach. He's certainly growing in stature and in experience. But, you know, he's got some things to work on as well.
Today was a learning experience. I mean, like, you guys kind of touched on it. That was just like, you ideally want to get the ball to Joe Harris, but everybody on the Raptors and Nick Nurse knows that you need to get more creative and set something up. And when the play doesn't work, you need to have, you know, some type of backup option where it's not Joe Harris trying to initiate the play like Matt mentioned. But let's talk a little bit about the fourth quarter. Did you guys feel like the Nets just kind of ran out of gas?
Yeah. I mean, I felt like, you know, it's funny, like, I just felt like both teams looked, it was a weird stretch to kind of end the game, because I mean, the Raptors just never looked good in that game. I didn't feel like there was one point where I was like, well, except for Powell, who had a real stinker of game one, but my goodness, he came
just
back resurgent. Yeah, well, I don't know what was going on. That guy was like, I mean, he's really good, so I don't want to take any away. He put up, what, like 14 a game this year, and like, he's just really athletic and get to the rim. And
couple big playoff performances last year for him, too, especially, I want to say, in that Milwaukee series.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I really like him, but he was, like, out of his mind today. And I was just like, I don't even know what to even do about the majority of this game, because both of these teams, I mean, the Nets really, and I think this was probably the Nets' best effort that you're going to get, maybe outside of Karis playing a little bit better, but across the board, I thought they were really good. At least defensively. Offensively, I feel like they could have had a couple more guys pop. But just in terms of, like, the execution for both teams, I was like, my goodness, this is messy to finish this out.
Yeah, I think that the Nets saved their worst basketball for the final quarter. And yes, that was probably telling in a lot of ways. They outscored 30-19. You know, the Raptors went on, you know, some 10-0 runs here and there. But, you know, the Nets just hung around throughout the night. You know, there was a four-point advantage the Nets way in the first quarter. There was a one-point advantage the Raptors way in the second quarter. There was a three-point advantage the Nets way in the third quarter. So they just had to maintain that ascendancy rather than letting the Raptors go on their mini runs, on any sort of extended run. And unfortunately, that did happen. And you know, Norman Powell was out of his mind. But when you have the quality of depth that the Toronto Raptors do, some of these guys can pop off. You know, Fred VanVleet, we know, is a really good player, but he's not going to be, you know, like a freaking Steph Curry, Damian Lillard. But today, it happened to be a guy like Norman Powell going 11 of 17 from the field. You know, he didn't kill us from three. He was just driving like a madman and finishing weird and reckless angles that I'm just like, okay, you do your thing, Norm. At the end of the day, you can't necessarily stop that. So, yeah, it was disappointing, because I think that the win was there for the taking, Nick. And I think that was probably the most disappointing thing. And I mean, when you're waking up at these early hours, it just makes you even angrier. And it makes that morning nap that little bit tougher to get down from.
You don't even want to go to sleep. You're just that upset. I mean, I just felt like in the fourth, and you could almost feel it happen in the first quarter, because guys have to play so hard. Like, they have so much responsibility, where the Raptors are able to kind of balance it out and they don't have to count on one guy to do everything. Where it's like the offensive end, you're counting on Karis so much to distribute and run the offense. And defensively, you're asking Jared Allen to pretty much just eliminate everybody in the paint. And he did such a great job, but I just felt like it's starting to tax on them in the fourth quarter. If you check out my Twitter, I clipped a play and it was like transition defense. And you just kind of see the guys almost walking back. And it's like, some of it's like, guys, come on, this is, you know, the fourth quarter of game two, you have a chance to win this game. But then part of you feels bad for them because you just know how exhausted they are. And this is a situation that none of them have ever been in. So it's just like, I don't know if even Jock Vaughn can balance it any better because they're so dependable on their best players. And it's just more than likely they're going to be fatigued at the end of the game.
Look at those minutes. 39 Joe Harris, 41 Jared Allen, 35 Garrett Temple, 39 Caris Levert, 36 TLC. Has TLC ever played 36 minutes in his career in one game? I would be very surprised if he has. You know, those minutes aren't normal.
And they're heavy minutes too.
Yeah, and like you're going up against a team that makes you work. And even though they were a little bit off tonight, the Toronto Raptors are still an immense team in so many different ways. So, and obviously it is. It's playoff basketball as well. So the intensity is just ratchets up a little bit on both ends of the floor too. So it's tough, Nick. And, you know, obviously, you know, we can pick out plays and that was certainly poor. And it's like, come on, you have to be engaged for 48 minutes, and like we sort of alluded to, 1 or 2 minutes stretches can lose you this game. And you give a team like the Raptors any little slight bit of momentum, especially in transition where they're so deadly. And we talked about that in the preview. I talked about that in my piece for OTG Basketball. It's just going to give them those little openings, and you can't give a team like the Raptors an opening. And unfortunately, it just happened to be in that final quarter. And yeah, I think it is definitely like, you know, come on, guys, be more engaged. But it's also like, man, these guys have played some heavy damn minutes against a really damn good team. And again, you know, we talked about it, and if you want to compare it to seasons past, it's very rare that we would see these minutes for Joe Harris, Jared Allen, Caris Levert. You know, Garrett Temple was probably the guy that's probably more used to playing 35 minutes or so. But and in the minutes that they did play, I think you couldn't ask more from a guy, Joe Harris, Jared Allen. Caris Levert, it just wasn't his night. And I mean, I guess we can get to the individual players in a little bit.
From tight muscles, tough workouts, signs of aging, to simply making it through each busy day, everyone understands what it feels like to be tense and sore. So everyone can benefit from TheraOne CBD products. Started by Jason Westland, TheraBody exists to provide you with the best scientifically validated natural solutions to help you soothe your body and relax your mind. It started with the revolutionary Theragun percussive therapy device when Dr. Jason saw the benefit of using CBD in treatment. He created TheraOne to bring you CBD products done right. A lot of CBD products claim organic, but still contain up to 30% filler, and these fillers are potentially toxic. TheraOne tests their products 4 times before they get to you. Every product is USDA certified organic, grown in the US, and their CBD extracts are the highest quality available anywhere. Use TheraOne's warming lotion in your morning routine, the cooling lotion or massage oil to recover your body, and Body Balm for targeted relief and sleep tincture to drift into deep night sleep. And now, through Labor Day, Monday, September 17th, TheraOne is offering our listeners a buy one, get one free for all TheraOne products. But you've got to go to theragun.com/bluewire. If you don't love what you get from TheraOne, send it back for a full refund within 30 days of purchase. This is not something TheraOne is likely to do again. Buy one, get one free at theragun.com/bluewire. But until Labor Day, go right now to theragun.com/bluewire. Sunday, Sunday, Sundays are coming back in the NFL. With NFL Sunday Ticket.tv, you can stream every live out-of-market NFL game every Sunday afternoon on your favorite devices, plus Red Zone and DirecTV Fantasy Zone channels. Never miss your favorite teams and favorite players. No matter where you live, NFL Sunday Ticket.tv is your key to the most glorious Sundays ever. Use the promo code BLUEWIRE at checkout to get 15% off your subscription. Visit NFLSundayTicket.tv and use promo code BLUEWIRE.
Yeah, let's talk Caris. Obviously, popular name on Nets Twitter today. 16 points, 5 of 22 from the field, 0 of 4 from 3, 6 of 9 from the free throw line, 6 rebounds, 11 assists, and only 2 turnovers and 1 block. Obviously, pretty poor shooting night for Caris, or day, whatever you want to call it. Matt, what'd you think of his game today?
You looked really strong in spurts. I don't remember. I think this was on Zach Lowe talking about playing him almost as like their Manu Ginobili.
Yeah.
You know, I'm starting to really, really warm up on that. And it feels like a slight to Caris. I don't want it to be a slight to Caris because I think you'd start him with the starters. But when he gets cold, it's like it's freezing. Like it's really tough. Like and it's something about it. It's like the second he starts missing his shots, his decision making is gone. His way of getting out of it is weirdly shooting, which at least today it was. So I think looking at that long term, I just think they wore him down. Those damn Raptors. I mean they really ran him down and they exhausted him with the hedges. So I wonder if there's a way to insulate that a little bit more. That's not going to happen in this series, by the way. So I don't know what they do about that. But I think it's something to try to take some notes on. Maybe not overreact too much, but take some note off of.
I will say that his passing, again, continues to be sublime. There were some passes, like to TLC who missed a dunk today. The pace and timing that he's got on these passes, it's just like, it reminds you a little bit of D'Lo in some ways, in terms of just the timing that he has and the read and feel for the game and getting his teammates open. You know, he's playing great basketball as the CLVPG, as I like to call him. But at the end of the day, we're relying on him for shot making too. And, you know, when he's taking 22 shots and he's only making five of them and he's not hitting all his three throws either, and that three ball is gone. Like before tonight's game, he was shooting just above 25% from three. After tonight's game, it would probably be sub 25%. And it sucks because, you know, he's normally quite good creating off the dribble. We know he's not the best catch-and-shoot player. We've mentioned that plenty. Matt's made a point of that quite a bit too. When your guy, you wanted him to be shooting 40%. If Karras is shooting 40% tonight, I think that we probably get this W, you know, at the end of the day. And I think some of his shot selection was a bit forced in ways. I also do think that the Raptors defense forces you to take good shots rather than great shots, as Jacques Vaughn alluded to as well. So I think that he did some good things tonight, and that was the passing, that was the feel for the game, that was rebounding. I thought the team rebounded incredibly overall. And like you mentioned, the only two turnovers to go with 11 assists, that's great. But we are relying on him to also just make shots, be a mid-range shot, beat a three-point shot, beat on his drives, beat those free throws. And that was what he just didn't do well tonight, and that was crucial.
I thought they did a really good job, the Raptors, taking away that short mid-range game that he's been so good. Like, there was a play where he went up, and I want to say, was it Siakam blocked him. And I just remember seeing that, and I was like, they have looked at the scouting report here with Caris LeVert. Anyways, I'll let you go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, you mentioned Jack and you mentioned Matt. Like, the passing has been really good and running the offense at certain points. And just, it was an off-shooting night, but I think a lot of credit to the Raptors because, like, Karras is such a rhythm player. And it just felt like he was never in rhythm and never comfortable. And that's a lot of credit to the Raptors. And even, like, some of the shots he took, it didn't even feel like he really wanted to take them. There was a lot of, like, fading to the baseline, like little mid-range jumpers that he doesn't even typically shoot that much. And if he does, it's like when he's hot. And it felt like the Raptors forced him to that. And obviously not hitting the threes is really going to hurt him because it's just going to make it that much easier for the Raptors to defend him. And he's not going to have that space at the line to create and do what he wants to do. And it's just going to be a really tough series. And I wouldn't be surprised if Karras doesn't have a good shooting night against the Raptors this entire playoff series, just based off the way they play him, his skill set, and needing to have a rhythm. I just don't know if he'll ever get comfortable in the series because we've heard this before with star players. You get double teamed so much, and then when the double team's not there, you start thinking there's a second guy there, and it's all in your head, and that just kind of feels like what he's going through right now. He's just kind of out of sorts with his shooting. At least the passing's still there, but the Nets really need him to at least score 20 to have a chance to win.
Are you guys worried overall, just a general talking point, you know, future-wise for either his individual career or his fit with the team next year, about the lack of the three-point shot? I know I was listening to Sam Vecenie, who's a guy who does great, like, draft stuff and scouting stuff, and he was talking about how, like, at college, in a small sample size, you know, he was shooting, like, 40% from three in his time at Michigan, and it seemed to me that once he hit the NBA, that three-ball shot just seemed to leave, whether it was, like, the extra couple of feet or whatever it was. But, Matt, what are your thoughts on, you know, Karras, I guess, losing his mojo from the three-point line?
Well, I'm a nerd, and I've, like, looked at his mechanics.
Love it.
And it's embarrassing, but in one of the quarantine days, I just, like, sat down and was, like, looking at clips of his mechanics from his rookie year and his this year in college. I don't think his mechanics have changed, but I don't find them to be consistent. Like, yep. I've always felt like it's like a different jump shot every time, which is really strange to watch. I think that's why his pull-up shooting was so good, because that is in itself a really I just think there's a little more rhythm to that. If you're dribbling into a three, it's, you know, for some guys, like, it's just easier to align yourself correctly and position yourself in the right way and get your elbows kind of, you know, tilted inward a little bit more. So I think that that is for him, like, the biggest thing right now is that I don't know what's going on with the mechanics, but yeah, of course I'm a little concerned about it. Like, it's the most important part of the modern game. And I don't think he can do it personally. I don't know what's going to change, but I don't really think that the outside shooting from him is going to change that much.
I think Matt is 100% spot on with the point that his shot changes. And I think, Jack, you and I have mentioned this in the past where just certain attempts look different. And that's spot on too, Matt. When you have the pull-up game, it's just more in rhythm. The ball's in your hands. It's almost like one motion because you have to stop and then just go straight up. Where when you're catch and shoot, it's just like things can get a little bit discombobulated and you're kind of all over the place. It just feels like Karis just needs like a really, really good shooting coach that works on his form and it stays on top of him about keeping those mechanics the same way every single shot. I think he's a skilled enough basketball player where he can develop a three-point shot. Like, there's plenty of guys in the league we know firsthand, from Jason Kidd being one of the worst shooters entering the NBA and now being an all-time leader in three-pointers made in the NBA. So I think that's an area you can grow. It's just going to take a lot of work. And I almost think any NBA player, if they have decent mechanics, they can work into being at least a average three-point shooter. So I have a little bit more faith than Matt if Karis puts in the work, which he's shown he's been able to do in the past with other aspects of his game.
Shout out to Nick for using discombobulated on a podcast. Never thought I'd hear the day. Shout out to the vocab, my guy. In that respect...
No, I mean, like, just go out there and shoot a little bit, especially if you haven't shot for a while. Your form's going to feel real weird.
I will say we're all not just Nets fans here, but we're all, you know, NBA obsessed in so many different ways. The Alvin Gentry, the shooting coach for Alvin Gentry's New Orleans Pelicans, obviously he's fired now, reformed the mechanics of Brandon Ingram, reformed the mechanics of Lonzo Ball. And yes, Lonzo obviously had a poor bubble experience and Brandon Ingram did to an extent as well. But those guys shot the ball well and have good mechanics now. And if you've got if Josiah's got an extra couple of $1 million hanging in the pocket from some Alibaba stock that's rising, throw it at that dude or throw it at someone in San Antonio. We know that the work that they do there, because or whoever's doing it with goddamn, I mean, Joe Harris has, you know, gorgeous mechanics. And I think it's just about fine tuning. I'm always generally somewhere in the middle of what you two guys say. I'm worried to an extent that I think that, you know, it's going to affect his fit with the team going forward, and just generally his effectiveness as a player. You know, he's never been a great true shooting, effective field goal sort of guy, but he's just got so much talent in so many other different areas that you have to look beyond the stats. But if he does hit the three ball at a respectable rate, you know, give me 35%. I think that would be immense from him. But I wanted to touch on TLC, Nick and Matt, and it felt like he shot better than 3 of 10 from the field. I know, Matt, you were putting on Twitter quite a bit. It's just like, whenever you shoot, you're expecting it to go in.
Yeah.
And it felt like, you know, 2 weeks ago, we were definitely not saying that.
I don't know what to make. It's like a toxic relationship. Like, I don't know. I feel so great inside when this guy's making threes, and then it's just like the worst feeling when he's missing on shots. I actually think he's a pretty good shooter. I've like kind of like come around. And I'm like, okay, like when he's off, the misses are pretty close. Like even the misses today, it was like one was in and out, one kind of hit off the side of the rim, but it could have gone in if it was contested a little bit less. So, look, here's my thing with TLC, and unfortunately, I hate to do this. I hate to talk about next year. It's impossible for me to not talk about these guys and look at next year a little bit. It's impossible, especially with the news that we got with Joe Harris. So I'm not gonna do a preview or anything. I'm not gonna do anything like that. Let me just say this. For what he brings, and even if he's a little bit inconsistent, comparatively to what the market is gonna provide for what his skill set is, what his length is, what his youth is, what his contract is, I'm in. Like, I'm all in. I'm in on TLC. I think if he's playing well, he's a real asset. I actually really trust him in those corners. And even today, like, sure, he didn't have a great shooting night. Thought he spaced the floor well. He's a good cutter backdoor as well. Just like, you know, he's done that a couple times in this Raptor series where he'll cut backdoor and it'll bring in a defender ever so slightly. I actually think I touched on this Garrett Temple article today that nobody read, which is what I get for doing. And doing articles on game days is the dumbest thing. I need to stop doing that. But this Garrett Temple article I wrote There is a play where TLC cuts baseline and it sucks in the defense. I believe it was Pascal Siakam ever so slightly. And even when Rhodey's late on the pass, it still gives Temple a decent look at three. So, yeah, didn't fall today. Really like him. Whatever. He'll shoot 11 out of 11 next game.
Yeah, he seems like a slightly above average three-point shooter that is streaky. Like, the shot is looking better, and even on, like, some of the makes, it's like, okay, that barely even touched net. Like, he's definitely improving that area, and I think I agree, Matt. Like, he has probably a spot in next year's team given his contract, and I think there's plenty of room for improvement, especially defensively. You watch him play. His just, like, hand placement is really bad. He gets himself in a lot of foul trouble just putting his hands in a bad spot. Just showcase them, keep them up, keep them out. He's always trying to get his hand in there for a steal or whatever it might be. There was even a play today where he's just like leg kicked out and he kicked somebody. And it was just like, TLC, these are just like small things that you can correct. And then you wouldn't have to spend even time on the bench because you're not in foul trouble. And I think another area, especially since it seems like, you know, the long-term use of him in the NBA is going to probably be small forward at least, that he just needs to get a little bit stronger too. Yep. Like, just add a little bit more strength, and it'll help you defensively at the point of attack. Guys won't be able to move you so much, and you don't have to get caught with some of those little fouls.
Yeah, he's got to keep his hands out of the cookie jar, as the saying goes. I'll echo what Matt sort of said. I thought he was really effective today. Still went 6-16 from the field, still had 17 points, and still did some really good things on the floor and just provided great spacing. You know, like Matt sort of said, that corner three. Could you imagine, you know, if TLC was on the Rockets, or even more so, if they had
playing with Kyrie's there.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if he's on the Lakers right now? They need TLC. They need a TLC. You know, replace Danny Green or KCP with TLC. They win that game against the Blazers, and things would be very different. And to quote the famous girl group that has the similar initials, he ain't no scrub. You know? And
there we go.
And like Matt alluded to, the contract, you know, it's like $1.2 or $1.8 million. Another real big tick for Sean Marks. We could just take a bit of a flyer on a young guy who has, you know, some tangible things, you know, but 3-point shooting, and he seems to be quite a coachable player as well. And I think that the things that you're alluding to, Nick, in terms of just the silly ticky-tacky fouls, I think that can be coached out of him just with experience. You know, he's not used to playing starter-level NBA basketball. It's his first ever time doing it. Obviously, he's been around the wings a little bit in OKC and Philadelphia. But overall, I think he's had an incredible bubble experience, and a lot of credit to Sean Marks and a lot of credit to the man himself. The Frenchman is making it fly.
And the coaching staff. I think they've just done a great job with a lot of these guys. But like you said, you know, credit to the player. And I think there's definitely a role for him next year, given that his skill set is complementary. And with better stars, he's going to have an easier job out there. But we did talk a little Joe Harris early on. Did you guys want to mention anything else about his game today?
I don't have anything. I actually weirdly feel like I need to go. I'm going to do a big old. This is probably my last big film dive of the year. I don't know like how many notes.
Come on, man. We get the people what they want.
I don't know. We'll
you got to do the free agent film dives.
Yeah, I mean, I have a bunch of clips from this series, so we'll be looking into that. But I think this we're coming up to it. I think this year could be. Well, you never know. Maybe I won't have that attitude. So let me. I honestly need to rewatch kind of what happened with Joe Harris, but they were able to run him off. I feel like some of the threes he hit were like a little bit deeper today, like just a little hair deeper. So I thought he was great, man. Like, he impresses me every single game. He's just, I don't know, man. He just, I don't even have any words for him. I just, he shows up where the team needs him. The rebounding is such a great example of that.
Sign him. Open up the checkbook, Mr. Tsai. Like I said, the Alibaba stock seems to be going up. We're watching those, you know, the New York stock market. We know you're going well, mate. You know, you got the billions in the pocket. What's another $10 million for Joe Harris at the end of the day? He is played insane. Rebounding the ball as well as anyone out there. And the three ball, like sort of Matt was alluding to, he's just reading it better, and he just seems confident. He just is just like, you know what? If it's 2 feet back, I'll take it. If it's semi-contested, I'll take it. And, you know, he was angry on certain plays as well. Love seeing Joe Harris angry. It gets me.
Yeah, he was really pissed on that Lowry call.
Gets me a little bit worked up in some ways. I will say that, boys. I was in bed. It was a nice time. But Joe Harris, man, oh, gosh. Heck of a bubble experience. Heck of a game tonight as well. You know, 4 of 7 from three. You know, the fact that he's still able to get those 7 shots up, because you can just tell Toronto's like, we want anyone to take a three except for you. So the fact that he hit over 50% of his threes. It still boggles me how he's continuing to improve. And like we sort of said, and we sort of previewed, you know, how would Joe Harris go in the playoffs with the extra attention after a bit of a very poor postseason last year against Philadelphia? He has been great.
Yeah, he's done a lot better job. And I think, like, this is a guy who's only going to, you know, shoot better next year when he's playing next to Kyrie and KD. Because
How, Nick? He shot, like, 55% from three.
Well, I mean, shoot more. I mean, like, 9 shots, 7 attempts. Like, I felt like, you know, in the first half, Toronto limited him to 3 shots, I believe. So, like, getting him more touches is going to be so much easier when you have KD and Kyrie out there. I felt like he did a nice job in the second half getting more of those looks maybe in transition or when Toronto wasn't fully set up. Because, like you mentioned, they did a great job. They had OG, you know, chasing him a lot of the time and just smothering him at that line. And he just – it's not as easy to get some of those layups that he typically gets against a Toronto defense. So, he's taken what the Raptors are giving him. Sadly, it's not a ton, but he's still performing at a high level.
And you know what? All the doubts that anybody ever had about him and playoffs and stuff like that, we can put those to bed. Like we're done with that. The Joe Harris can't play in the playoffs, whatever. If that narrative even was out there, it's done. Like let's retire that.
Let's talk Jared Allen for a little bit. You know, he had a big game. It just felt like he was really everywhere defensively in this game, especially to start this one. And he had 14 points, 15 rebounds, got to the line 6 times. What do we like about Jared Allen today?
I thought his switchability was good. I don't know. It's a growing experience for him. So he's going to bite on pump fakes here and there. The Raptors were very keen on doing it in the third quarter, and they stopped because he did a good job. Like, he was really good. I thought the short roll, again, a little give or take, but yeah. I like that he's making those reads. It's better than him not making those reads and holding on to the ball and or not even asking for the ball. Like, you have to remember, he's 22. There's a maturation process. And the only way to figure out all this stuff is for him to do it. And that's what he was doing today. So I like it, man. I disclaimer, I think that's probably going to be what my angle is tomorrow, is just appreciating Jared Allen. And, you know, I thought he was, I don't know who the best player on the court was, but I think he's in that group along with, I guess, Norman Powell. But
he was the best big today.
He was great. He was great. He made, you know, he made Marcus Gasol unplayable.
And that's saying something. You know, we talked about, you know, the lack of depth at the center position and Jared Allen playing 41 minutes. Obviously, you know, Rodion's pinch-hitted here or there. We'll probably get to him in a little bit, but he's just been outstanding. You know, yes. In terms of the growth and the responsibility on his shoulders, he's relished it and he's performed. You know, I can't, you know, off the top of my head, there have been few poor performances from Jared Allen. And yes, there's going to be elevated turnovers when the ball's in his hands. You know, he will make bad decisions. But at the end of the day, I want the ball in his hands more than I would want it in, you know, Jeremiah Martin and, you know, Rodion's Kuritz for that respect as well. You know, 3 blocks tonight again. He's just, I've said this before, he has all defensive caliber talent. You know, he's not your typical Rudy Gobert center. And I think Rudy Gobert has gotten better at being switching. And I think the scheme overall, a switching scheme, does suit Jared Allen as well. More than, maybe not more than drop coverage, because, you know, at the end of the day, he's an immense rim protector too. But he can do it. And that shows his flexibility and malleability as a defender as well. I really liked, I guess, as a coaching point as well and a talking point generally for the game, I liked that they were switching more today. I think that made things tougher for Toronto, especially in that early period. I thought it was a nice little coaching point. And Jared Allen adjusted greatly. And he's still just, he makes things so tough for the opposition, even if he is making a few mistakes here and there. You know, no one's perfect, but he was awesome. And it continued. Those boards, man, like he just fights, and I love it.
Yeah.
5 assists today, and yeah, I think 3 of them came in the first quarter on a short roll where he made a lot of good reads. And even some of the turnovers weren't even bad decisions. I don't know if you guys saw this. It just, like, the ball, like, looked like it slipped out of his hands, like, yeah, 2 or 3 times. Yeah. I was, like, kind of confused almost. But I think Allen has a lot of potential in that switchability stuff. He just has to learn, like, just some of the fundamentals out there and how to play the guards. And also would help if someone would occasionally rotate behind him to give him some help when someone gets to the rim. But that's for another day. And the only thing I'll say about Jared Allen that just kind of drives me nuts sometimes, it's like he's scared of Kyle Lowry. Like, there's a couple times where he had Lowry in the paint, and it was just like maybe he's scared he's going to get a charge called on him or something. But, like, just glide right past him and lay it up. You know, you're willing to do it against other guys. There's just a couple opportunities in this game where I think they need him to be a little bit more aggressive down there.
Yo, I'll head to Orlando. I'll quarantine just so I can give 6 fouls to Kyle Lowry. You know, if that's what Jacques Vaughn wants me to do, I will happily do it because you know, he's going to be on his ass more than not if I'm out there, that's for sure. But yeah, I think that that's just the demeanor of Kyle Lowry in a lot of ways. And as much as I do dislike him, it's hard to hate anyone, but he just makes an impact. He's pesky, and he's a really good player. You know, he leads that team in a lot of ways. But guys, I think it's going underrated. I know that Matt, you mentioned, you know, and Nick, you guys mentioned that Jared Allen was maybe the best player out there. Despite that final play, I think Garrett Temple was awesome. Absolutely, yes. Awesome. Led the team in plus minus, 21 points, 5-11 from three. A lot different from 1-11 or 1-10 or whatever it was. 3 assists, 4, hit all his free throws. I thought, and you know, had a steal, was great defensively. You know, he was having, you know, positions on Pascal Siakam. He was switching on everyone, and he was making things tough. I think that Garrett Temple can. I put a tweet out like a week ago about Garrett Temple needs to be on this team next season, and it's still getting likes and retweets because it's got that evergreen staying power because he continues to play so freaking well. And I'm loving what he's doing in this bubble. Matt, what did you think of his game?
I thought it was great, and I kind of just want to echo everything that you said right there. I don't know. I just like his performance was just going to be huge no matter what, because the Raptors are going to like try to give him like the touches that like they're going to predicate everything to him. So if he's going to knock those down, then that's going to greatly boost Brooklyn's performance. And I think you saw that like literally on the court today.
Yeah, I think that was huge. We talked about it on the preview, like Garrett Temple's a guy that's going to get open threes. And if he can hit them, it's going to make the Raptors, you know, he's going to punish them for that. And it's going to maybe even open things up a little bit more for other guys, because eventually if he hits 5 threes, they're going to have to start rotating his way. He even hit a couple big shots in terms of like mid-range jumpers that kind of helped the Nets when the Raptors are making a run. And given this bubble team, you know, his veterans presence is huge. Like having a guy that has experience and willing to communicate. And it's like almost after every possession, you see him talking to one of the young guys about something they could do differently or do better.
Yeah, that was, I'm trying to look through my article on this. Cause he comprised a third of their misses. I'm trying to remember this.
He was definitely 1-10 in game one.
Yeah. So I think it was a third of the misses that he had. His misses represented a third of Brooklyn's. And obviously if you flip that on its head, it really changes up their, I guess, dynamic. So yeah,
today,
I mean,
he almost had half of the makes.
Yeah. So he's the X factor. Like that'll be my, I'll die on that hill with him.
And I think that's fair because, like we said, this is a guy that's going to get those shots and the Raptors are going to live with it. If Garrett Temple drops 30, like they're going to be okay with the loss. But let's talk about somebody who had a pretty rough game in terms of Rhodey Odom's crew. It's who scored 2 points, 15 minutes, 1-4 from the field, 0-3 from deep, 2 rebounds. Just looked all out of sorts and just probably one of his worst games in the bubble, if not his worst.
Boy,
that sigh, my guy, that sigh sums it up.
Especially at a time where the Nets, if they just got an average performance from Rhodey Odom, it could have changed the game.
I just like he is the most hot or cold player I've ever watched. Like, I give TLC grief for this. Rodion's Kurucs is like the world's biggest negative, or like, oh my god, what is Rhodey doing? Nets Twitter is going crazy. Here's the thing. Like, I could tell the second he stepped on the floor and it wasn't a foul, it wasn't a missed three, it wasn't a turnover, he tried to set a screen for, I think it was Karis. And I was that's the laziest screen of it. And I'm like, look, like, I'm not going to sit here and, like, you know, lose my mind over a steal. But I was just like, ugh, like, that just, like, the flow of it, it just, like, it didn't do anything. And if anything, it brought a third defender over to Karis. And it completely clogged the possession. I don't know why. The second I saw that, I was like, oh boy, like we might, he looks already lost. And it's been like 2 minutes into this game. So yeah, man, I mean, this was a big opportunity for him to prove himself. I said it on my stream a little bit earlier. He has arguably the biggest opportunity outside of maybe like a TLC or somebody like that. But a bigger opportunity than any of their guards, and Martin and Chioza and Musa and who did Johnson. I not mention? Tyler Johnson. He has a huge, huge opportunity because of the position he plays and because of the positions he could ideally cover. He has not nailed this, like, you know, he has not nailed this at all, that opportunity. Like the audition, he has failed that audition right now.
Yeah, I mean, there were some positives throughout the seeding games and the scrimmage games, where it's like, oh, he looks, he gives the Nets a bit of spacing at the five when he's out there. But he was, again, reluctant and a bit hesitant when he was sort of taking that three, rather than sort of just like having that confidence and that mentality, just like, let it fly. If it misses, it misses. And, you know, that screen that you alluded to, Matt, I mean, it sort of reminds me of another screen later in the game where he just like decided to like tackle, like shoulder charge OG Anunoby. I was just like, and I was like sort of fired up in my head. I'm like, oh, come on, stop flopping, OG. And I'm like, oh, shit, man. Like, you can't do that. This is basketball.
Yeah, if OG punched him in the face, I wouldn't have even, like, felt bad. Like, that's just like, bro, what are you doing?
That's, and I mean, it's sort of emblematic of sort of what Matt's alluding to in terms of just the lack of consistency and the basketball IQ sometimes. And obviously, he is a young player. We've spoken about his lack of basketball experience, blah, 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 blah. But he's an NBA player now, and he needs to be smarter and just make the right plays and not do dumb things on the floor at the very least. And unfortunately, tonight, he wasn't able to do that. And, you know, very well could have and probably should have got a flagrant for that play, and he was lucky not to. It was a very, very silly play at the very least. And, you know, if the Nets got a little bit more out of him, if he had to hit a three ball once or twice, or if he, you know, even if he was, you know, making sort of pesky plays and getting those fouls, I would have been fine. But they were, as sort of Matt alluded to, they were just dumb plays on the defensive end. And we can't afford dumb plays from our rotation players right now, especially against a team like the Toronto Raptors that is so damn smart.
Like you guys mentioned, he was just out of sorts. Like, the screening was an issue. And then even times when he did set a screen, he'd roll to the wrong area when the Nets probably wanted him to just pop out. And then, like, he would be cutting when Karis is driving. It's like, you're making the paint even more clogged than it already is. And then defensively, there was literally a possession where he was looking the wrong direction. I was just like, oh my God, this is an NBA game. And you look so confused, like you have never logged minutes before, played this scheme, or played with Jared Allen. It was really frustrating. And it really hurt the team, because you can't depend on Jared Allen to play the entire game at center and not have any reinforcements in the big department. But what'd you guys think of Tyler Johnson?
I don't even know. I wish I had a concrete take on him, because I like certain aspects of his game, and I don't think they gave him very easy looks. I'll say that. Like, it felt like most of his shots were really well contested. And maybe that's just a size thing for him. I don't know. But, I mean, he had his moments. I still like that. Like, if you run him off the three-point line. Actually, you know what? Let me scratch all that. I like his floater game. I don't know if I'd seen that
before. Yeah.
That was interesting.
He hit a couple tough ones.
That was very interesting. He hit two consecutively. I kind of took note of that. I've seen him, you know, drive all the way to the basket, get contact. He's got that nice little, like, if you run him off the line, he can he can make like the mid-range pull-up, but off like one dribble. But yeah, the floater game was cool.
I thought that despite the fact that he was a minus 15, he was probably the best player off the bench. And that's not saying much when Rodion's Kuritz and Chris Chiosa are your competition. But, you know, 12 points, 5 of 10 from the field, hit 2 or 5 from 3, had a couple of dimes. And I thought that he was pesky defensively. I think that... That's one thing we've sort of spoken about. And I think overall, we've been, I think everyone on this podcast has been really happy with the production that he's provided. But, you know, I think the switching scheme suits him as well, because it just allows him to sort of just hone in and move his feet. I think he does have nice, quick feet. He certainly looks healthy. And I think that that's one point, I think, why he is producing at such a, probably at an above high level that we probably would have expected from him heading into the bubble. And, you know, I think that it wasn't his best game, but he was still had productive moments on both ends of the floor.
Yeah. Any final thoughts on Chris Chiosa before we get out of here?
4 assists, 3 points, 12 minutes. That seems to me what you're going to get from Cheese, from Cheesy Cheese, from Chai Cheese, whatever you want to call him, from the grater. He's going to go out there. He's going to make... It's just like, you know, he just doesn't have enough offense. It's pretty simple. I think he had like one quite nice drive, and, you know, he was able to get to the line, you know, with his handle. You know, when he's aggressive, he looks good, but it seems to me that his mentality is never aggressive for the sake of getting a shot off. It's aggressive for finding someone else in, like, you know, a Rajon Rondo sort of mentality. But I think that, he's going to be playing extra minutes. You know, that 12 minutes is going to probably turn into 20 with Joe gone. You know, Rodon's is 16, is going to turn into 25. Tyler Johnson's 22 is probably going to turn into 30. And the Nets are definitely going to be poorer for it. But let's see what they can do with the extra responsibility on their shoulders. Maybe we see some Dante Hall. Maybe we see some Justin Anderson again. Maybe we see a little bit of Lance Thomas. Maybe we see Nets Twitter's favorite, Jonathan Musa. Who knows? Let's get weird with it. You know, we're 2-0 down. It ain't going to happen this series. Might as well get weird with it, right, Nick?
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think Chioza honestly might still be a little bit hurt. Like, he just doesn't seem quite as quick. He was dealing with the abductor injury, which is pretty bad for any, like, small player, any type of hip injury. Same thing that really hurt Isaiah Thomas. He just doesn't have the same spark to him. Like, he doesn't have that speediness that we're used to seeing. I don't think that's, like, a huge component of his game, but it feels that way out there. But any adjustments you guys want to see for Game 3, or just kind of let it happen because we have no Joe Harris?
Oh man. You know what? Let's get weird. Like, let's put did Jeremiah Martin play in Game 1? I feel like he did.
Very small minutes. I think it was like 8 minutes or something, or 4 minutes, something like that.
You know what they should do is just go super small. Like, just because they like, I think they should just throw like a six guard, like, or not six, but like six guards out.
Give us an extra man.
Yeah, just making things up. They should throw whatever, however many guards they have, all six of their guards out, throw three guard lineups, four guard lineups, just do whatever they got to do, and just make this series weird as possible. Have Caris LeVert play power forward. I don't know, man. I'm out of ideas. Like, they really need Joe Harris for spacing reasons. TLC, I think, is going to be really overtaxed. I really hope it doesn't, you know, take him out of the flow of the offense too much. But, get weird. I don't know. Play Lance Thomas.
I think I said this, I'm not sure if it was on this podcast or it might have been on Just Ball Things NBA podcast, where it was like, if you can't be good, be entertaining. So we're not going to be that good, clearly, when you lose your second or third best player. So let's have some fun with it. Let's get a bit crazy. Overall, though, Nick, in terms of the adjustments that were made from game one to game two, you know, in terms of, you know, the three-point shooting was down from Toronto, you know, from 50% down to 25%. You know, the switching scheme was good. You know, maybe continue to just switch like crazy, you know, and throw, you know, we've got about 18 point guards and shooting guards on the roster. So, like Matt said, get small ball with it. Let Jared Allen be the only one that rebounds the basketball and try and take care of the ball a little bit better. I mean, Obviously that's easier said than done against the Toronto Raptors, but, you know, those turnovers are going to get punished by a team that loves to get in transition. So, I mean, X's and O's are nice to sort of analyze, but at the end of the day, Nick, it's better to just get a bit wacky with it, get a bit crazy with it. We like to do that on the Brooklyn Buzz, don't we?
Yes, and I think there's only so much you can do with the X's and O's given the talent differential, like you guys mentioned. So maybe just get really crazy, force Nick Nurse to do some wacky stuff. But other than that, you know, we'll just see what happens. As always, guys, a pleasure, and you can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, OTGBasketball.com, and Blue Wire Pods.
Sports are coming back, and so are your chances to bet on your favorite teams at events. Major League Baseball is back in action. There's no better place to start wagering than our exclusive partner, BetOnline. Check out all the odds and prop bets to bet on, all available 24/7. And with the return of sports, BetOnline has sat down with former pro athletes Eddie George, Harold Reynolds, and seven-time NBA champ Robert Horry. See what they have to say on what it's like playing without fans in a series they're calling Fandemic. Visit betonline.ag for all your odds and up-to-date sports news. Remember to use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings. A four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.